This is Audible.
The Skywalker's bedroom, Rotunda Zone, Coruscant, 0300 hours.
This is going to be another sleepless night. But should I have killed him? Maybe I should try some meds, warm milk even. I've taken a lot of lives. Ever since Ben asked us how many, I've been counting. Maybe Luke's been adding up the tally too, but he hasn't mentioned it since. Where's Ben? I was better placed than anyone to assassinate Palpatine. Now I look back on it and wonder how history would have turned out if I'd come to my senses and killed him when I had the chance. I'd be a traitor then. I'd be a hero now. And he'd still be dead either way. Perspective is a funny thing. How many people died because I didn't make that call? I didn't even realize that I could. Ben, I feel you're alive. But where are you? It's been days. So how would I have known when it was the only option left? When things had gone too far and someone had to do it? And how come Luke is sleeping like a comatose nerf? I wish I could. Ben, if Jason doesn't know where you are, what are you up to? Ben, if you can feel me, reach back. Let me know you're okay. Luke never believes me when I tell him he snores. He snores all right. Ben, you okay? Luke's awake. He can do that without warning. Bang, he just snaps alert. It's the middle of the night. I know. You're worrying about Ben. I'm worried about him too. He punches the pillow into a more comfortable shape and buries his head in it. But he's okay. I can still feel him. Nothing is okay now. Luke knows it. I know it. The whole family knows it. There's a war going on across the galaxy, but it's the war within my family that I care about most. My son's a stranger most days. And Jason. I don't think I know Jason Solo at all. And Lumaya. She tried to kill my kid. For that, sweetheart, you're gonna have to answer to me. I'm coming for you. And soon. I think I can get some sleep now. I feel more relaxed already.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
Random House Audio presents Star Wars, Legacy of the Force, Sacrifice, by Karen Travis. Read for you by Mark Thompson.
Sith Meditation Sphere, heading Coruscant, estimated.
It was odd having to trust a ship. Ben Skywalker was alone in the vessel he'd found on Zyost, trusting it to understand that he wanted it to take him home. No navigation array, no controls, no pilot seat, nothing. Through the bulkheads he could see stars as smeared points of light, but he'd stopped finding the ship's transparency unsettling. And there was no yoke or physical control panel, so he had to think his command. The strange ship, more like a ball of rough red stone than a vessel made in a shipyard, responded to the Force.
"Can't you go faster? I'll be an old man by the time I get back."
The ship felt instantly annoyed. Ben listened. In his mind, the ship spoke in a male voice that had no sound or real form, but it spoke. And it wasn't amused by his impatience. It showed him streaked white light streaming from a central point in a black void, a pilot's view of hyperspace, and then an explosion.
"Okay, so you're going as fast as you can."
Ben felt the ship's brief satisfaction that its idiot pilot had understood. He wondered who'd made it. It was hard not to think of it as alive, like the Yuuzhan Vong ships, but he settled for seeing it as a droid, an artifact with a personality, and, yes, emotions. Like Shaker.
Sorry, Shaker. Sorry to leave you to sort it all out.
The astromech droid would be fine. He knew it. Ben had dropped him off on Drua. That was where Shaker came from, like Kiara, and so they were both home now. Ben straightened his legs to rub a sore knee, then settled again cross-legged to try meditating. It was going to be a long journey. He reached inside his tunic and felt the amulet, the stupid, worthless thing that didn't seem to be an instrument of great Sith power after all, just a fancy bauble that Kiara's dad had been sent to deliver. Now the man was dead, all because of Ben. And the worst thing was that Ben didn't know why.
They need to find Jason.
Jason could be anywhere now, in his offices on Coruscant, on the front line of some battle hunting subversives. Maybe this weird force-controlled ship could tap in and locate him. He'd be on the Holonews. He always was. Colonel Jason Solo, head of the Galactic Alliance Guard, all-around public hero holding back the threats of a galaxy.
Okay, Ben said aloud. Can you find Jason Solo? Have you got a way of scanning comlinks? Can you find him in the Force?
The ship suggested he ought to be able to do that himself. Ben concentrated on Jason's face in his mind, and then tried to visualize Jason's Star Destroyer, the Anakin Solo, which was harder than he thought. The sphere ship seemed to be ignoring him.
Can you do it?
Ben asked.
If it can't, he thought, I'll try to land inside the GAG compound and hope for the best. You don't want Galactic Alliance engineers crawling all over you with Hydra spanners, I bet.
The ship told him to be patient, and that it had nothing a Hydra spanner could grip anyway. Ben thought he might have more luck persuading the ship to seek Holonews channels. Or maybe it was so old that it didn't have the technology to find those frequencies.
Hey, come on. If it managed to destroy a freighter on the power of my thoughts alone, it can find a Holonews signal.
Ah, said the ship. Ben's mind was suffused with a real sense of discovery. The ship dropped out of hyperspace for a moment and seemed to cast around, and then it felt as if it had found something. The starfield, visible somehow, even though the fiery, rocky bulkheads were still there, skewed as the ship changed course and jumped back into hyperspace. It radiated a sense of happy satisfaction, seeming almost excited.
Found him?
The ship said it had found what it was seeking. Ben decided not to engage it in a discussion on how it could find a shut-down Jason hiding in the Force.
Well, let me know when we get within 10,000 clicks, Ben said. I can risk using the comlink then.
Colonel Jason Solo's cabin, Star Destroyer Anakin Solo, extended course heading 000, Coruscant, diverting via the Bogdan sector.
None of the crew of the Anakin Solo seemed to find it odd that the ship was taking an extraordinarily circuitous course back to Coruscant. Jason sensed the general resigned patience. It was what they expected from the head of the Galactic Alliance Guard, and they asked no questions. He also sensed Ben Skywalker, and it was taking every scrap of his concentration to focus on his apprentice and locate him. Jason homed in on a point of blue light on the bridge repeater set in the bulkhead. He felt Ben at the back of his mind the way he might smell a familiar but elusive scent, the kind that was so distinctive as to be unmistakable. Unharmed, alive, well, but something wasn't right. The disturbance in the Force, a faint, prickling sharpness at the back of his throat that he'd never felt before, made Jason anxious. These days, he didn't like what he didn't know. Jason waited. Somewhere in the Anakin Solo, he felt Lumaya, as a swirling eddy eating away at a riverbank. He let go and magnified his presence in the Force.
Ben, I'm here, Ben.
The more Jason relaxed and let the Force sweep him up, and it was now hard to let go and be swept, much harder than harnessing its power, the more he had a sense of Ben being accompanied. Then he had a sense of Ben seeking him out, groping to find him. He has something with him. Can't be the amulet, of course. He'll be angry I sent him on an exercise in the middle of a war. I'll have to explain that very, very carefully. It had just been a feint to get him free of Luke and Mara for a while, to give him some space to be himself. Ben wasn't the Skywalker's little boy any longer. He would take on Jason's mantle one day, and that wasn't a task for an overprotected child who'd never been allowed to test himself, far from the overwhelmingly long shadow of his Jedi Grandmaster father. Jason felt the faint echo of Ben turn back on him and become an insistent pressure at the back of his throat. He took a breath. Now they both knew they were looking for each other. He snapped out of his meditation and headed for the bridge. "I'll stop." The bridge was in semi-darkness, lit by the haze of soft green and blue light spilling from status displays that drained the color from the faces of the hand-picked, totally loyal crew. Jason walked up to the main viewport and stared out at the stars as if he might see something. "Hold this station. We're waiting for a ship, I believe." Lieutenant Taboot, current officer of the watch, glanced up from the console without actually raising her head.
"If you could narrow that down, sir..."
"I don't know what kind of ship," Jason said, "but I'll know it when I see it." Taboot put her fingertip to her ear as if she'd heard something in her bead-sized earpiece.
"An identified vessel on intercept course. Range 10,000 kilometers off the port beam."
A pinpoint of yellow light moved against a constellation of colored markers on the holo monitor. The trace was small, perhaps the size of a starfighter, but it was a ship, closing in at speed.
"I don't know exactly what it is, sir. It doesn't match any heat signature or drive profile we have. No indication if it's armed. No transponder signal either."
"Let me know when you have a visual." In Jason's throat, on a line level with the base of his skull, there was a faint tingling of someone's anxiety. Ben knew the Anakin Solo was getting a firing solution on him.
"Contact and visual range, sir."
Taboot sounded relieved. The screen refreshed, changing from a schematic to a real image that only she and Jason could see. She tapped her finger on the transparasteel.
"Good grief, is that Yu Jean Vong?"
It was a disembodied eye with double, well, wings on each side. There was no other word to describe them. Membranes stretched between jointed fingers of veins, like webbing. The dull amber surface seemed covered in a tracery of blood vessels. Somewhere in his mind, Lumaya had become very alert and still. "I knew the Yu Jean Vong well," said Jason, "and that's not quite their style." The audio link made a fizzing sound and then popped into life.
"This is Ben Skywalker. Anakin Solo, this is Ben Skywalker of the Galactic Alliance Guard. Hold your fire, please."
There was a collective sigh of amused relief on the bridge. Jason thought that the fewer personnel who saw the ship, and the sooner it docked in the hangar to be hidden with sheeting from curious eyes, the better. "Permission to dock." Jason glanced around at the bridge crew and nodded to Taboot. "Kill the visual feed. Treat this craft as classified. Nobody discusses it. Nobody saw it, and we never took it inboard. Understood?"
"Yes, sir. I'll clear all personnel from Zeta Hangar area. Just routine safety procedure."
Jason made his way down to the deck. When he reached Zeta Hangar, the speckled void of space was visible through the gaping hatch that normally admitted supply shuttles. He could also sense Lumaya. "So, what brings you down here?" he asked. She emerged from the shadow of an engineering access shaft, face half veiled.
"The ship," she said. "Look."
A veined sphere 10 meters across filled the aperture of the hatch, its wing-like panels folded back. It hovered silently for a moment, and then settled gently in the center of the deck. The hatch doors closed behind it. It was a few moments before the hangar repressurized, and an opening appeared in the sphere's casing to eject a ramp.
"Ben did very well to pilot it," Lumaya said.
She melted back into the shadow. Ben emerged from the opening in grubby civilian clothing. He looked wary and sullen, as if expecting trouble. He also looked suddenly older. Jason reached out and squeezed his cousin's shoulder, feeling suppressed energy in him. "Well, you certainly know how to make an entrance, Ben. Where did you get this?"
"Hi, Jason."
Ben reached into his tunic and when he withdrew his hand, a silver chain dangled from his fist. The amulet of Kalara. It exuded dark energy, almost like a pungent perfume that clung and wouldn't go away.
You asked me to get this, and I did.
Jason held out his hand. Ben placed the gem-inlaid amulet in his palm, coiling the chain on top of it. Jason slipped it inside his jacket.
You did well, Ben.
I found it on Zyost, in case you want to know. And that's where I got the ship, too. Someone tried to kill me, and I grabbed the first thing I could to escape.
Who tried to kill you?
A Bothan set me up,
Ben said.
Dire. He paid a courier to take the amulet to Zyost, framed him as the thief, and the guy ended up dead. I got even with the Bothan, though. I blew up the ship that was targeting me. I hope it was Dire's.
How? Ben gestured over his shoulder with his thumb.
It's armed. It seems to have whatever weapons you want.
Well done. Jason got the feeling that Ben was suspicious of the whole galaxy right then.
Ben, treat this as top secret. The ship is now classified, like your mission. Not a word to anyone. Like I was gonna write Mom and Dad about it? What I did on my vacation by Ben Skywalker, age 14 in 2 weeks.
Jason changed tack. Birthdays had a way of making you take stock if you spent them somewhere unpleasant.
How did you fly this? I've never seen anything like it.
Ben shrugged and folded his arms tight across his chest.
You think what you want it to do, and it does it. You can even talk to it, but it doesn't have any proper controls.
He glanced over his shoulder again.
It talks to you through your thoughts, and it doesn't have a high opinion of me.
A Sith ship. Ben had flown a Sith ship back from Zyost. Jason resisted the temptation to go inside and examine it. You need to get back home. I told your parents I didn't know where you were, and hinted they might have made you run off by being overprotective. Ben looked a little sullen.
Thanks.
It's true, though.
You know it is.
Jason realized he hadn't said what really mattered.
Ben, I'm proud of you.
He sensed a faint glow of satisfaction in Ben that died down almost as soon as it began.
I'll file a full report if you want.
As soon as you can. Jason steered him toward the hangar exit. Probably better that you don't arrive home in this ship. We'll shuttle you to the nearest safe planet, and you can get a more conventional ride on a passenger flight. With one last look at the sphere ship, Ben gave Jason a casual salute before striding off in the direction of the store's turbolift. Jason waited. The ship watched him. He felt it. Not alive, but aware. Eventually he heard soft footsteps on the deck behind him, and the ship somehow seemed to ignore him and look elsewhere.
A Sith meditation sphere,
said Lumaya. An attack craft. A fighter.
It's ancient. Absolutely ancient.
She walked up to it and placed her hand on the hull.
What a magnificent piece of engineering.
Lumaya's brow lifted, and her eyes creased at the corners. Jason guessed that she was smiling, surprised.
It says it found me.
It was an unguarded comment, rare for Lumaya, and almost an admission. It was searching for you?
It says that Ben needed to find you. And when it found you, it also recognized me as Sith, and came to me for instructions.
How did it find me? I can't be sensed in the Force if I don't want to be, and I didn't let myself be detected until... He paused. Lumaya's eyes were remarkably expressive. She seemed very touched by the ship's attention. Jason imagined that nobody... Nothing had shown any interest in her well-being for a long, long time.
It says you created a Force disturbance in the Galater system, and that a combination of your wake and the fact that you were looking for the red-headed child and the impression that the crew of your ship left in the Force made you trackable before you magnified your presence.
My, it's got a lot to say for itself.
You can have it, if you wish,
said Lumaya.
Quaint, but I'm not a collector.
Jason heard himself talking simply to fill the empty air, because his mind was racing. I can be tracked. I can be tracked by the way those around me react, even though I'm concealed. Yes, wake was the precise word.
It seems made for you, he said.
Meeting of the Clans, Mandal Motors Hall, Kel Dabe, capital of Mandalore.
100 or so of the hardest-looking males and females that Boba Fett had ever seen were gathered in the stark, charcoal-gray granite building that Mandal Motors had donated to the community. The hardest face of all was that of his granddaughter. Mir Tagev watched him from the side of the meeting hall with his father's eyes.
My own eyes. Fairfax, she really did have the Fett eyes.
Maybe he was seeing what wasn't really there, but the look bored through into his soul anyway. It was a look that said, you failed. He didn't hear the murmur of voices around him, just the soundless accusations that his daughter, Aelin, was dead, that he had never been there for her until it was too late, and that he might also be too late to start being a worthy Mandalore. His father had groomed him to be the best, and even if he'd never mentioned being Mandalore one day, it went with the legacy. Jaster's legacy.
Better be quick then. I'm dying. I got business to take care of. Priorities. A cure. Then find out what happened to my wife. What happened to Cintas Vell.
The hubbub of the chieftains of the clans, heads of companies, and an assortment of veteran mercenaries faded voice by voice into silence. They watched him warily. Not all of them were human either. A Tagorian and Mandalian, both wearing impressive armor, leaned against the far wall, massive arms folded across their chests. Species didn't matter much to Mandalorians. Culture defined them.
Oya!
It was muttered at first, then shouted a few times.
Oya! Oya!
A chieftain with an ornately shaved beard and an eye patch stood up to speak without ceremony.
So, Mandalore, he said. Are we going to fight or what?
Who do you want to fight?
Fett noted they reverted to basic when addressing him, in deference to his ignorance of Mandoa.
The Galactic Alliance? Corellia? Some force-forsaken pit on the rim?
Fett scanned the hall.
What's the first rule of warfare?
On seats, on benches, leaning in alcoves or just standing with arms folded, the leaders of Mandalorian society, or as many as could get to Kel Dabe, watched him carefully. Even the head of Mandal Motors, Jir Yamaget, wore traditional armor. Most had taken off their helmets, but some hadn't. That was okay by Fett. He kept his on, too.
Watching it for us,
said a thick-set human man leaning back in a chair that seemed to have been cobbled together from crates.
Second rule is how much is in it for us.
So, what is in it for us this time?
Us. Fett was Mandalore, chieftain of chieftains, commander of supercommandos, and he couldn't avoid the us any longer. The thick-set Mondo shrugged.
Credits, Mandalore. We need currency in case you hadn't noticed.
To spend on importing food?
That's the idea.
I suppose that's one way of balancing supply and demand.
What is?
Back one side or the other in this war. That'll reduce the number of mouths to feed. Dead men don't eat.
There were snickers of laughter and comments in Mandoa this time. Fett made a mental note to program his helmet translator to deal with it, and that felt like the ultimate admission of defeat for a leader. He couldn't speak the language of his own people, but they didn't seem to care.
I'm with the Mandalore on this,
said a hoarse male voice at the back of the assembly. Fett recognized that one, Neth Braylor.
We lost nearly 1.5 million people fighting the Vongese. That might be small change for Coruscant, but it's a disaster for us. No more. Not until we get Manda Yaim in order. We'll eat Boss Nerel if we have to.
A murmur of rumbling agreement rippled around the hall.
You wanted a decision from me? You got it.
Fett felt time accelerating past him, and it eroded what little patience he had. Every bone in his body ached right through to his spine.
Galactic Alliance, or Confederation? You think it's gonna make any difference to us?
No,
said another voice, thick with a northern Concordian accent.
Coruscant won't be asking us to disarm anytime soon. They might need us if they get another Vongese war.
Chakar, eh?
Someone laughed, but the debate picked up pace, still mostly in basic.
And what if the war comes too close to home? What if it spreads to a neighboring system or two?
Even if we side with the Alliance, what's to say they won't turn on us and expect us to toe their nice, tidy, disarmed line?
It's not disarmament they want. It's pooling every planet's assets into the GA Defense Force. And we all know how slick and efficient that's gonna be.
Fett brought his fist down hard on the nearest solid surface, a small table, and the crack brought the hubbub of discussion to a halt.
Mandalore has no position on the current war, and there'll be no divisions over it. Anyone who wants to sell their services individually to either side, that's your business. But not in Mandalore's name.
He braced for the eruption of argument from the sudden silence, thumbs hooked in his belt. His helmet's wide-angle vision caught a figure in purple armor standing at the rear of the hall. It wasn't always possible to tell if a Mondo in armor was male or female, but Fett was sure this was a man. Medium height, and with his hands clasped behind his back.
That's okay, then,
said a cheerful, white-haired man sitting a few paces from him. Baltan Carried. That was his name.
That's all we needed to know, that there's no ban on mercenary work.
I'll make it clear to both sides that there's no official involvement in their dispute,
Fett said.
But if any of you want to get yourselves killed, it's your call.
So we might see Mondo fighting Mondo in this Orotise's war. Everyone looked around at the man in the purple armor. Fett saw no need to learn the language, but there were words he couldn't avoid. Orotise. Non-Mandalorians. Occasionally pejorative, but usually just a way of saying, not one of us.
Hardly conducive to restoring the nation, is it?
But fighting's our number one export, said Carried. What do you want? Make Keldarbe into a tourist spot or something?
He roared with laughter.
I can see it now. Visit Mandalore before Mandalore visits you. Take home some souvenirs, a slab of ooge cake, and a smack in the mouth.
Well, our economic policy right now seems to be to earn foreign credits, get killed, and neglect the planet. We have a population of fewer than 3 million here, and maybe as many as 3 times that in diaspora. We lost a lot of our best troops, our farmland's been poisoned, and our industrial infrastructure is still shot to heron after 10 years. So maybe this is the ideal time to bring some people home. Gather in the exiles while the rest of the galaxy is busy. Carried was focused on the debate now, and Fett was temporarily forgotten.
Yeah, group up to make a nice easy target. All of us in one place.
Nobody except the Vongese has attacked us in a long time.
The Empire gutted us. You got a short memory? Or maybe you were still in diapers when Shysa had to kick some pride back into us.
Okay, so let's abandon Mandalore. Go totally nomad again. Keep moving. Rely on the whim of every government except our own.
Son, we are the Shabla government, Carried said. So what do you want to do about it?
Consolidate Mandalore and the sector. Bring our people home and build something nobody's ever going to overrun again.
Purple Man had a faint accent. A little Coruscanti, a little Caldabian.
A citadel, a power base, so we choose when we stay home and when we go expeditionary.
Funny. I thought that was just what we were doing.
Fett watched the exchange, fascinated.
What's your name?
Purple Man was leaning against the wall, but he pushed himself away from it with a shrug to stand upright.
Grodd,
he said.
Okay, Grodd. It's policy as of now. I'm asking for 2 million folks to return to Mandalore. How many you think we'll get?
It made sense. The planet needed a working population. It needed extra hands to clean up the soil that the Vongese had poisoned and to cultivate the land left fallow by dead owners. But every Mandalorian in the galaxy didn't add up to a single town on many planets.
We're still short on credits until we become self-sufficient in food production again.
We'll contribute half our profits, said the Mando Motors chief. As long as we can sell fighters and equipment to either side, of course.
Business is business.
Fett gave him an acknowledging nod.
I'll chip in a few million crates, too.
Carried looked around him, as if to single out anyone mad enough to dissent, but everyone had what they wanted from the meeting. Myrta still managed to look baleful. The slice of her mother's Heart of Firestone dangled on a leather cord around her neck. At least she had a decent helmet now, apparently her first, so that showed just how much of a Mandalorian her father had been, or how little she'd seen of him.
One last thing. I'm going to be away from base for a few days. Uncontactable.
How will we notice?
Someone muttered. It was a fair point.
So I'm not the governing kind, but I haven't let you down yet. While I'm away, Goran Bavin stands in for me.
There was no dissent. Bavin was solid and trustworthy, and he didn't want to be Mandalore. He was also a complete savage with a Beskad, an ancient Mandalorian iron saber, as many Yuuzhan Vong had discovered the hard way. Any argument about the isolationist policy in Fett's absence wouldn't last long.
We're done here, said Carried.
As the hall cleared, Myrta was left standing alone, arms folded, leaning against the wall.
I wonder if Cal Omos has such an easy time in the Senate.
You can't rule Mandalorians. You just make sensible suggestions they want to follow.
Fett walked outside and swung his leg over the seat of the speeder that Bavin had lent him, wincing behind his visor. He was close to giving in to daily painkillers.
Come on,
he said.
I've got some leads to follow up on the clone.
Myrta scrambled onto the pylon seat. Her armor clanked against his. She had the full set now, even a jetpack, courtesy of Bavin.
Has it ever taken you this long to track somebody? It's been months.
Don't push it. I make it about 65 days.
You believe he exists, then?
You wouldn't lie to me again, and you wouldn't make up the name Skirata.
No. You want me to come with you?
You think I need a nurse?
I said I wouldn't lie to you again.
As the speeder swooped over Keldabe and out into the countryside beyond, the scale of the Yuuzhan Vong's retribution became all too clear again. The course of the winding Kalita River was visible for kilometers now, because most of the woodland surrounding it had been flattened.
Scum,
Fett cursed. Fett gunned the speeder's drives and headed out over the countryside, mindful of the fact that he'd have taken on the Yuuzhan Vong even if they'd been the New Republic's best buddies. The Bavin Vasur farm appeared in the distance, almost on cue as a kind of reassurance that the devastation wasn't global. And there was Slave One, sitting on a makeshift landing pad. That was home. His ship. His father's ship. The cockpit where he had spent literally years of his life.
So am I coming with you or not?
Myrta was more trouble left to her own devices. Besides, he didn't want to let that Heart of Fire necklace stray too far. It was the one link he had to finding out how Sintis had died.
Okay.
Senate Building, Coruscant, Office of the Chief of State.
Not exactly our finest hour, Admiral.
Chief of State Cal Omos looked a much older man than he'd been just a few months earlier. Cha Nyathol prided herself on a decent understanding of human facial expressions and the telltale little signs of fatigue and stress.
We didn't lose the battle at Galata 8, she said. Whatever the Confederation claims.
We didn't win it either, said Omos. Consider this a wash-up.
We've had our wash-up, Jason said. We know what went wrong and why we fell for a trap.
Poor intel, said Omos. As a Jedi, do you not sense these ambushes?
We're neither invincible nor infallible, Jason said softly. I had unreliable intelligence, and that's an occupational hazard. The fact that we got out in one piece is largely due to Jedi skills. Ironically, my parents' and my uncle's skills.
You're too modest, Colonel Solo,
Admiral Niathal said.
I hear you fought quite remarkably.
Omas flicked the controls of the holoscreen set in his office wall. A fly-through image of a planet resolved into a cityscape. Hololink showed inset 3D images of explosions and smoking skylines.
Now we have reports of fighting breaking out on Repoblus.
Why? Jason asked. Nobody in the C-PAN system has any interest in the Confederation. I've had no intelligence that...
They don't need any love for either cause, said Niathal. We've reached the free-for-all stage. What better time than during a civil war to resurrect the dispute with Demok? Like a cantina brawl. One fight breaks out and everyone suddenly remembers they have a score to settle.
There'll be plenty more Me Too conflicts, Omas sighed. And we have to ask where we draw the line.
Chief of State, even the Empire never managed to stop the C-PAN wars, and it was prepared to take far more extreme measures than we are,
she said.
We should resist any pressure to get involved. We're getting perilously close to overstretch.
Omas changed the hollow image to a tote board of the Senate composition. The names of most of the member planets were listed in red, but some were in blue. There were more blue names than she remembered from the last time she'd seen this list.
Two more members seceded last night, Omas said. Las Lagon and Beris. Minor worlds, but let's do the arithmetic. The more planets that secede from the GA, the fewer military assets I have to call on, and the more assets there are that are potentially available to the Confederation.
Jason was a master of expressionless contempt. I think I can work that out, yes.
And you still believe in responding with maximum force within the boundaries of ethical treaties?
Yes.
Then we're on a downward spiral.
Omas walked into the center of the room.
Sooner or later, secessions reach a point where the GA becomes the rump, where the Confederation equals and then outnumbers us.
In that case, Jason said, they can defeat us without a shot being fired. They can break us with a sheet of flimsy. I'd call that surrender.
Star System, MZX 32905, near Bemeel.
There was a presence following her, and Lumaya could pick it out like a beacon even at this range. So could the meditation sphere.
Broken,
said the ship. In the back of her mind, the presence manifested as a jagged, shattered mass of black and white glass. If she concentrated on it long enough, it resolved into a whole vessel again, but the cracks were still visible.
It's broken, all right, Lumaya said. What shall we do? Allow it to catch up? Or shall we see how good a hunter it is?
The meditation sphere felt elated. The smoldering red flame that seemed embedded in its bulkheads grew brighter and more golden, and Lumaya felt a conspiratorial sense of humor flood her. The ship was enjoying itself. Of course, it had been dormant on Zios for untold years, a conscious thing waiting for purpose and interaction. Nothing in the galaxy enjoyed being alone, be it flesh or metal.
Time to jump, she said.
The meditation sphere felt as if it took a deep breath and lunged forward. There was no inertia, no sensation of movement whatsoever. And yet Lumaya was sure her stomach leapt and her head spun with the acceleration. For a moment she felt panic.
You're safe,
the ship said. The broken pursuer has jumped too, said the ship.
Try not to outrun it too far.
Lumaya searched herself for regret and loneliness and found none. It was still good to find a sense of kinship with another intelligence.
We don't want it to lose us.
It is still following us, said the ship.
What did you think of your last pilot?
Lumaya asked.
Not like us. Not Sith material, then?
No. The ship knew Ben wasn't fit to be Jason's apprentice. Less like us than the one who follows. The meditation sphere dropped out of hyperspace and made convincing speed for the asteroid. Lumaya gave it a mental image of marking time until the pilot on their tail had located them again, and then showed it her habitat on the asteroid. They prepared to dock. Home, said the ship.
Thank you.
Lumaya got to her feet and stood in front of the bulkhead. The glowing pumice thinned to transparency. But it wasn't a visual illusion. The bulkhead opened to the atmosphere, and a ramp formed from the ship's casing. When Lumaya walked down into the hangar area, an old Conqueror assault vessel was edging through the airlocks. She hadn't seen one of the figure-eight-shaped ships in a long time. The hatch popped, and someone emerged, partly swathed in a cloak, but with a distinctive limping gait.
You take your risks, Dancer.
Lumaya was beginning to find Alima Rar a liability.
I might have fired on you.
The Twi'lek threw the cloak back from her face and tilted her head.
But you didn't.
The Twi'lek's eyes were on the meditation sphere.
We find this ship interesting. I thought you might.
Lumaya indicated the doors leading to her chambers.
Seeing as you're here, you might as well come in.
Alima prowled around the ship, gazing at it from all angles, clearly fascinated.
It thinks,
she said.
This ship thinks. Thinking's useful. Try it sometime.
Lumaya knew she ought to handle a mad woman more carefully, but she was short on tolerance today.
What brings you here? We have been tracking the Anakin Solo. We have considered Jason Solo's attitude to his parents, and we think we might gain access to Han and Leia Solo by working with Jason. It would be helpful for all of us,
Lumaya said carefully,
if you avoided crossing Jason Solo's path at the moment. There's a war on, you know. We have our task, and you have yours. Ours is to have balance for what the Solos did to us. Leia will still be trying to bring her precious son back to the light, and that means he remains good bait for our purposes. Let me put it another way,
Lumaya said kindly, steering her toward the doors.
Get in my way, and I'll kill you.
Alima gave her a curious, lopsided smile, but allowed herself to be ushered into the living quarters.
Do you know who you are dealing with?
Alima asked.
Yes, I do,
Lumaya said.
And I'll still kill you if you let this feud ruin bigger strategies. There'll be time for you to have your revenge later. Interfere with my plans, and I'll kill the Solos myself. And then you'll never have your balance.
Lumaya lowered her voice to a soothing whisper.
And you know I can do that, don't you?
Seemingly unperturbed, Alima gazed around Lumaya's quarters. Alima had the look of someone sizing up an apartment and deciding whether to buy it.
No, you can't stay here, said Lumaya.
You understand revenge, said Alima.
She settled on a sofa, one arm conspicuously limp, and a petulant frown creased her brow for a moment.
Luke Skywalker destroyed your life. You want to punish Luke, as we want to punish Leia. We wish to help you achieve your objective.
Luke seems to think that too, which I find staggeringly arrogant, said Lumaya. But if hurting Leia is what you want most, letting Jason get on with what he has to do is going to hurt her most of all.
Do you want to hurt Leia?
Alima asked.
She's done nothing to me,
Lumaya said.
I have no feelings either way. There might be something you can do to help me. Something you do better than anyone. Keep tabs on Jason for me. Covert observation.
We will. But can you not locate him any time you want?
Not closely enough.
Lumaya didn't have the complete Sith ability to see all the pieces in the game, every element in the battle. That was for a full Sith Master. But she didn't need to let on that she had fewer powers than Alima might think.
I don't have time to log his movements, but for his own safety, I need to know exactly where he is at all times, especially when he leaves Coruscant. Do you think you can do that? It's tedious work, but necessary.
We can.
And lose the Conqueror, I'll find you a less conspicuous ship.
Sandhya, Vitajuice Var, Coruscant.
Chalya?
You know?
Sokcha.
Mara swirled the sediment of the ground apple and dewflower juice around in her glass and drank reluctantly as Kip Duren watched. He clearly had something to say that he didn't want to bring up in the Jedi Council Chamber or in front of Luke. And Ben still hadn't called in. The Anakin Solo had arrived back at Coruscant 2 days earlier, and there was no sign of Ben. Somehow she'd hoped he would have made his way to Jacen, even if he wasn't feeling communicative. Just feeling that he was alive and unharmed wasn't enough. He was her little boy. She didn't care how many center points he could take out.
If I didn't know better, Kip said, I'd think you were avoiding me. The whole Jedi Council, in fact.
Just busy. But you called me here for a reason, and it wasn't to boost my antioxidant levels.
Well, maybe I'm just observant, but we have an out-of-control Jedi on the loose. Maybe the Council can help you with that. You know, combined efforts of the most experienced Jedi in the galaxy.
What if I say Luke and I can handle it on our own?
Oh, family business.
That, and the fact that not all the Council is on the same side, so we don't want to open a rift, Mara said.
Been there.
Done that. Put yourself in Corrin's position. Would you feel comfortable helping the chief of the GA's bully boy police after what he's been doing to Corellians and even his own parents? Better we clear up our own family mess.
I'm surprised that Luke's tolerated Jacen this long, Kip commented. I wasn't entirely joking when I said we should make Jacen a master. People tend to stop throwing rocks when they're inside the tent.
I think now might not be the best time.
Is Luke embarrassed he's got problems within his own family? Mara almost blurted out that she'd stopped Luke from acting more than once, and now she bitterly regretted it. But that wasn't wholly true.
If I tell you that I've identified the root cause and I'm going to deal with it, will you back off?
I note the pronoun.
Luke knows what I'm doing.
Which is? I'm going to kill Lumaya. That removes the threat to Ben, but how does it deal with Jacen?
She's infiltrated the GAG. I don't know who her insiders are, but we have to assume she can get at Jacen, too. She might even influence him. She's got to go.
Mara flinched as her comlink chirped. She pulled it from her belt and raised it to see Ben's face.
Mom, I just landed.
Ben, are you at the military port?
No, the civilian one, Galactic City. Look, I'm sorry that...
Stay right where you are. Don't move, okay? I'll meet you at Arrival 7B, okay?
Mom...
No arguing this time. Be there,
Mara said, and strode for the doors. She worked her way through the crowds at the spaceport, sensing Ben's location. And suddenly, there was Ben, sitting on the white marble pedestal of the 10-meter abstract statue of Prosperity that formed one of the supports for the central dome of the roof of the arrivals hall. Ben looked like any other 14-year-old kid, drumming his heels idly against the marble, staring intently at his data pad and keying in something one-handed. A GAG trooper passed him. Ben looked up, nodded in acknowledgement, and got a respectful nod back. If Mara needed a reminder that Ben was anything but a normal teenager, that was it. He was a junior lieutenant. He commanded troopers like that. Her son helped run the secret police. But she'd learned the most silent and efficient ways to kill the Emperor's enemies by Ben's age. And Luke had been just 4 years older when he joined the rebellion. What did we expect to give birth to? A librarian?
Hi, Mom,
Ben slid the data pad into his jacket pocket. He had that tight-lipped look that went with bracing for a dressing down.
You're mad at me, right?
Mara paused, wanting at the same time to yell at him for terrifying her and to grab him in a ferocious hug. She settled for swallowing both reactions and ruffling his hair. He'd never live it down back at the barracks otherwise.
You couldn't call us? She said. You couldn't even tell Jason where you were?
Ben frowned slightly.
I'm sorry. I was on a mission, and I didn't want to give away my location.
We can talk about it later. Let's have lunch. She gestured toward the exit.
It's okay. Your dad'll be happy just to see you back safe. No yelling, I promise.
Ben slid off the pedestal in uncharacteristic silence, and they walked to the speeder platforms. Mara kept a careful eye on the crowd, not entirely sure if she'd recognize or even sense Lumaya if she was around.
What are you frightened of, Mom?
Ben asked. Mara didn't take her eyes off the crowds around them. She scanned constantly, as she had been trained to do.
Okay, you might as well know. Lumaya is trying to kill you.
Ben gave a little grunt that might have been disbelief and seemed to mull over the idea rather than show alarm.
Because she still got this vendetta with Dad?
Mainly because you killed her daughter.
Okay, I'll take her word for it.
Mara shielded Ben as he got into the speeder. The hatches closed with a sigh of air, and she turned to look at him closely.
I mean it, Ben. She's dangerous, and she's subtle.
So until we neutralize her, you have to be on your guard. She's got connections within the GAG. It could be anyone.
If she was going to have this spy of hers in the guard kill me, she'd have done it by now.
He slouched in the passenger seat.
But I'll be careful. Wow, this is getting messy. What with Jason on Fett's list for killing his daughter and me killing Lumaya's? I suppose that's what the job's about, isn't it? You collect enemies. Hey, the boys have got a bet going on when and how Fett's gonna come after Jason.
Mara wasn't sure if Ben was making light of the threat for her sake or just indulging in normal teenage dismissal. Fett was the least of her worries.
And have you placed your bet? Oh, Jason can take him. But it's kind of weird that Fett hasn't made a move. The longer he waits, the more people get freaked, I suppose. If Fett comes for Jason, she said, let him handle it, okay?
The speeder climbed into one of the automated sky lanes and headed for the rotunda zone. Ben gazed out the side screen in silence.
So can you tell me what this mission was?
Mara asked. Ben did that 3-second pause that meant he was framing his words carefully.
I had to bring back a prototype vessel. I wasn't in any more danger than I could comfortably handle.
That was a relief. It was just an errand. Although why Jason hadn't known about it baffled her.
Slave 1 en route to Baydor, Kuat System.
Myrta Gev had settled for being tolerated by her grandfather, and although she made an effort to love him, it was hard. Part of her still wanted to make him pay for the life her mother and grandmother had endured, and part saw a man who had every form of regard shown him, except love, and pitied him. Overall, she saw a man who put up Duracreek barriers and defied anyone to breach them. As he took the fire spray out of Mondalore's orbit and prepared to jump to hyperspace, his expression was set in apparent blank disdain for the everyday world. She decided his helmet presented the softer face of the two.
Your clone's not an active bounty hunter. I checked every bounty hunter and wannabe on the books, but none is called Skirata. Plenty of people on Mondalore knew Cal Skirata, and then gone. Vanished.
But he was on a hunt, I know that. He told me to get out of his way.
Did Fett believe her? She'd stitched him up and tried to lure him to his death, so she could hardly blame him if he was having second thoughts about the clone. The man was real, all right.
So we're retracing his steps?
Yours.
How are you going to pass yourself off as a client looking to hire a bounty hunter?
I'm not. You are.
Myrta suddenly realized why he'd agreed to let her ride along.
My, I do come in handy, don't I?
Earn your keep. rules of any partnership. Stand by.
He didn't deploy full dampers when Slave One jumped. He never did. The acceleration to light speed and beyond felt like being punched in the chest and then sat on by a hut. She made a point of biting her lip discreetly as the stars streaked to lines of blue-white fire and the crushing sensation passed. That had to hurt him, too. He was a sick man. Myrta fumbled in her pocket, pulled out some painkiller capsules, and held them out to him. He took them without a word. His fingertips were cold. It felt like a long, silent lifetime to Coati space. Myrta filled it with planning how she would disembowel Jason Solo, if and when she got the chance. There was already a line forming for the privilege. Babu Ear wouldn't say what he had in mind for him. All she was certain of was that Boba Fett never turned his back on a score that required settling.
Decelerating in half a standard hour.
Baydor was a striking contrast to Mondalore. Slave One swept on a descent path past orbiters and over cities studded with straight rods and open plazas. Myrta checked her datapad to orient herself. They landed at one of the massive public ports in Bunar, and Fett went through his ritual of setting all the alarms, trip beams, and other lethal traps that would greet anyone stupid enough to try breaking into Slave One. He brought a small speeder bike in the hold, and he swung onto the seat a lot more easily than he had last time. The painkillers were strong enough to anesthetize a bantha.
You're navigating.
He bounced a little on the leather saddle, as if testing whether he could feel any pain.
Get on.
Myrta patched her datapad into her helmet system.
Head down that speeder lane and go south for 5 kilometers.
Fett steered the speeder through increasingly seedy neighborhoods and canyons of high-rise warehouses and apartment houses.
So what were you after here?
Fett asked.
Recovering stolen data.
You mean people around here can read?
No. I have clients who can. The locals steal anything, even if they don't know what it is. I go and persuade them to hand it back.
And your clone with the gray gloves was definitely here?
Yes.
After a couple of wrong turns, the cantina appeared right on cue. A sign above the door said, "Welcome to the Paradise Cantina." It also said, "No helmets."
I'm offended that they don't respect cultural diversity.
That's how I know what the clone in the gray looked like. He took his helmet off.
Fine.
Myrta took off her helmet. Fett ignored the request above the doors. The bar smelled as bad as it ever had. A mix of vomit, stale ale, and oil that could have been from machines or very old fried food. The clientele matched their environment, possibly because they'd spent their disposable income on state-of-the-art weaponry. The Coati barkeeper was filling small dishes on the countertop with pickles that bore an unappetizing resemblance to eyeballs, so they stood at the bar trying to look normal. Normal for the paradise, anyway. The barkeep caught sight of Myrta first. She must have been staring at the pickles too carefully.
You gotta buy a drink, he said. No snacks without...
Then his gaze swiveled. The helmet got his attention the way a chest plate alone didn't.
Oh-ho! You got the nerve to come in here, have you, you Mondo slag?
He ducked below the counter for a split second, and that meant only one thing. Myrta wasn't sure if she had her blaster level before Babu Ear did, but when the man straightened up with a highly illegal short-barreled 10-loss disruptor that could have reduced them both to ground nerf, he was looking down the muzzle of Fett's sawn-off EE-3 and her Blastech 515. It startled the barkeep long enough for Fett to land a left hook straight in his face. He fell back against the glasses stacked behind him, and a couple smashed on the tiles. Fett caught the disruptor as it clattered onto the counter. Myrta instinctively covered his back, but none of the customers moved. Fett examined the disruptor and jammed the safety catch on hard, one-handed.
Remember, no disintegrations.
The bartender staggered upright, cupping one hand under his nose to catch the dripping blood.
The last Mondo came in here wrecked this place. You're all the criffing same. I don't want you in here, so why don't you...
Myrta realized she must have missed some fun and games after she'd left the great clone to his hunting.
There was a long-lost relative, she said. We're looking for him.
Well, when you have your family reunion, I want him to pay for the damage from last time.
The man didn't seem to recognize Babu Ear.